Here we go. It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation Live Cowboys training camp here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. And our coverage brought to you by the on-time experts Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar, a delicious place to eat. Here's Broadus with Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement king. Take it away.
Thank you very much, Dawson. Appreciate that. Thank you very much to Reliant for being a part of this one as well. Hope everybody enjoyed three live mics today. It's always a lot of fun. I enjoy that. Enjoy watching practice that way and bringing it to our listeners. Wolchek, did you have a chance to take a peek at Nate Thomas a little bit? Any thoughts on what you saw from there?
Yeah, I think overall he was solid today. You know, I thought that him and Tyler Smith worked well to pass off some blocks together with Sam Williams and Donovan Ezeraku out there. I think some of the power was showcased. He was able to produce a couple of step-up lanes there for Dak. I do think there were a couple of times, yeah, the pressure from the starting offensive line, like Dak would have been sacked a few times.
Sure.
But overall, I mean, I didn't see Thomas today and say, like, oh, he was a liability.
Right.
Credible left tackle while Guyton's out. Credible?
Yeah, to me...
Not the worst in the NFL?
No, I made sure. This is like the first time that you kind of try and look at everybody and get an idea where the ball's going to go and then look at the point of attack blocks and see who's doing a good job with that. But I found myself just watching him, and I was worried about, was this going to be too much?
Mm-hmm.
Was there going to be too much pressure on him? And as a backup guy, you're kind of in that mode where you're just, you know, you're kind of comfortable. Okay, I'm going against a certain style of guy. You know, when he's going against the ones, it's ones versus ones. It's not the Jason Garrett when he used to go ones versus twos, you know, and you saw a little bit of that kind of one group beating up on the other. But this is one versus ones, and I'll say this though: there was a couple of snaps where his pass set, you know, and when you're a young guy, you can get overly anxious mm-hmm. when you're pass set. And there was one Ezeraku rushed him, and Ezeraku has caused a lot of problems. We've talked about this since camp's been on. He causes problems. He does the way he rushes. His quickness, his explosiveness causes problems. And sometimes when you worry about that, you want to get to those guys so quick. You want to get your hands on them quick. And then Dawson was talking about how you get over the tops of your feet.
Start leaning.
And now when you lean, what does Donovan Ezeraku do? He grabs your pad.
Mm-hmm.
He grabs your pad and just swims around you and then gets up the field. Because he feels all your weight on the ball to your feet. And so he is... It was a very patient set a couple of different times where I was watching him. And they ran the reverse. We got out there, the reverse. You're talking about the run stuff. Everything was kind of going the other way. But, you know, him, you know, having the awareness to chase, be a blocker, get down there. Everybody else did a great job on the right side of kind of caving everything and getting the ball to the edge. His responsibility is to get, you know, across the field, try and pick up a block. You don't know when that ball is going to cross. You know, you got to do that. It was a really nice effort on his part. But I was impressed with his pass set because I was really worried about him being anxious and then overextending and that being a problem. Then you got guys running around him.
Did you notice them sending, like, help his way? Like,
no.
Not really,
no.
Just keeping him on an island?
No. It was – he was – I don't think the game plan for him – any of that? I don't. You know,
no, I didn't. I mean, I think any time that they added the extra lineman, it was on the opposite side of the line scrimmage.
They would
when they
trade.
Went jumbo.
Yeah, they would trade, and when we mean trade, they would take the guys. They would set the formation to the left and trade it back to the right, and he was left on the back side. Or there was one time where they ran the ball where they traded it, and the ball went back to the left,
mm-hmm.
and so he's basically on the weak side of the formation. And then he was able to get his block, and they were able to make a cut or two.
So how many plays do you think you were watching Nate Thomas where he got destroyed, and you're like, well, there's a drive killer. Did it happen?
I didn't see
– Nice.
I didn't see anywhere. There was nothing – now, okay, we just had Bland, Deron Bland, on our show here a little bit ago. He got home on a slot blitz, and you wonder, was it a – bad read by the quarterback? Did they not slide the line? Who's responsible for the slot blitzer to his side? Is that something he's got to bump out to? He's got to see that.
Is it a back? It,
that's what I'm saying. The back to me went front side. Mm. The back went to the right. The blitzer came from the left, from Dak's left, and that would be to Thomas's side. So I wonder if there was a, you know, it might be one of those things where the way the protection is, that's just a free rusher.
Yeah.
That's a free rusher, and Dak has got to get that thing out of there and get it home. But he told you he would have had a sack. He pulled up. I mean, Dak's holding the ball, and he goes by Dak. So that's going to be a hit, a sack. But I wonder if maybe that was a time where either Dak's responsibility, usually they teach you to let the furthest guy from the ball go. Mm-hmm. That's the quarterback's man, the furthest guy from the ball. Bland's the furthest guy from the ball right there. So I don't think it was probably a Thomas mistake at all right there. So, good for him. I was worried about him being a little anxious, and I don't think he was at all.
That's going to be something that's good for the defense, though. I mean, those slot blitzes, man.
Yeah.
They're going to make some plays.
Well,
doing that.
We saw it under
Marinelli.
Well, Monty Kiffin.
Yeah, Monty was good.
Yeah. Rondé Barber
back in the day.
You could go all the way back to Monty Kiffin when he was here with Scandrick,
mm-hmm.
Bringing the slot blitz, and we've seen it before, and so I think that's something that, and Bland said, Bland's like, I really don't want to play in that slot all that much. And that was a good question because
he's so good at it.
So he really, really is. Well, Chuck, you said something interesting at the break.
Yeah.
And
as he often does.
Yeah. And I was interested. I'm going to allow you to, and I'm going to let everybody kind of talk about it if they can. You're not buying what you've seen in a few practices of this running back room.
Yeah, I've been underwhelmed with what we're seeing with the runners. Now, you don't have full pads on. So, mm-hmm. like, tomorrow will be another day where we can get a better idea of, okay, what's really going on here. But today, I don't think anybody is separating themselves. I think you were able to see Javonte Williams with a nice catch out of the backfield. You uh-huh. definitely see the speed and some slipperiness from Jaden Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Maffa had one good run. Hunter Lipke had a good run. But I didn't notice anything from Miles Sanders.
Me neither.
I didn't see him out there.
It was mostly Blue.
So to me, it's like, and maybe, hey, Sanders is the guy. And last week when you were out here, Brian, and we didn't get eyes on this, personally.
Right.
So I was kind of coming in thinking like, all right, I'm ready to see Miles Sanders separate himself. And maybe they feel like he has, and that's why he didn't get as much run today. And we'll be able to see that tomorrow. But I'm not exactly blown away by what I've seen since we've been out here in two practices from that running back room. I think you got a lot of guys that, if the offensive line is good, can they be productive? Yes. But you don't have anybody, to me, that's a difference maker.
No, and I think a great running back might be more important than ever in today's NFL. Like, I don't know how high you draft one or how much you pay, but, I think when you're dealing with the modern linebacker and some of these corners who bring a combination of strength and speed, you need a difference maker. You need a great offensive line to open the holes and get yard before contact, but you've got to find guys that can make dudes miss, that can run through tackles and take it to the house. And I don't know if they got one of those guys. I guess the only chance right now would be Jaden Blue, as he develops and gets more comfortable in his role. But I anticipate this is going to be by committee and, hoping Lamb and Pickens can carry the day offensively, and then we're going to be right back in this spot going into the draft, like, where are they going to get their RB1? Because even if Jaden Blue hits, he is more of a Warwick Dunn or Alvin Kamara type of hit, most likely, from what I've seen. I think he's an incredible offensive weapon, but an every down back that can punish the defense, I don't know if we're going to get that.
Yeah, I think that, to me, if you talk to, and I talked to a scout who went to the University of Texas, that Texas felt like that he was really a 15-carry-a-game guy.
Yeah. Okay.
That he wasn't a 25-carry-a-game guy. So maybe this thing is actually going to be by committee, is what it's going to be, and we'll see how that all plays out.
Nice complimentary guys. You got a big dude, you got a quick dude, you got a pass protection guy. I wonder how much it's going to tip off the defense when they make a change.
Yeah, I just, like I said, the practices I've been able to see, I've been impressed. I didn't think Sanders had anything left. Where I've been impressed is he's actually shown some
that he can still play.
That he's got some quickness too. To me, I think this thing is going to be completely flipped. I think it's going to be Sanders blue, and then Williams is going to be the third down back. That's how I see this thing playing out.
It makes the most sense.
I don't think that Williams is going to be the starter. I think they're going to find a way to they're going to have to get their most explosive guys there in the, you know, and work that way about it.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40 usually, but we just had CeeDee Lamb on the podium, so we went ahead and moved it around. You can also check back every day at 5:20 for an abbreviated Cowboys camp report if you missed the big one in Krusty's Corner. Okay, coming up next, Wolchuk, is this you?
How many Cowboys could fetch a first-round pick, and do the Eagles have their own Micah Parsons? That's next.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3. The Fan. Have more Cowboys stuff coming up here for you at 4:40. And then Sands is going to join you at 5 o'clock. We'll be 24 hours out of the MLB trade deadline and talking about all the angles. Segment of the Nation brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214-817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Salute to our training camp sponsors, the on-time experts, Rhino Shield and Yardbird, Southern Table and Bar. Here's Wolchuk.
All right, so this was a very interesting Barnwell article on ESPN. He put together which players could net you first-round picks.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that this is always fun. We all love a good trade conversation. Now, he did try and do this with, okay, there's always one outlier team that might value a player that other people don't. So he tried to do where I'm looking at, okay, a handful of teams would at least have interest in giving up probably a one for said player. He also tried to look at historical trades where you don't have a lot of players after turning 30 get dealt. He says in 1994, he had the Vikings dealing a 33-year-old Chris Dolman to the Falcons. That was one of the outlier moves. The only 29-year-olds to get dealt for first-rounders, Richard Seymour, Devontae Adams. Otherwise, you're looking at players out that are quarterbacks, or they're probably young, you know, in their prime right now. So for the Cowboys, who could get you two first-round picks and more? There was only one player. That would be Micah Parsons. And he's still waiting on the long-term contract. He had a whole write-up about it. He's a year younger than Khalil Mack was at the time of his deal.
Wow.
And Mack had a Defensive Player of the Year award under his belt, but Micah has more sacks than what Khalil Mack did by 12.
Jeez.
We're talking 12 more sacks and way more quarterback knockdowns over his first four seasons. The Mack deal came just shy of two first-round picks after accounting for some other stuff that they also threw into the deal. So if they did end up having an issue getting this thing done, you would be able to get a pretty nice treasure chest of goodies in terms of multiple first-rounders for one Micah Parsons if the Cowboys decided to go that route.
As impressed as I've been with the Cowboys pass rushers, I don't think they're at a place yet where you could feel like it's time to get crazy, right? Because right now I'm thinking I need Micah Parsons. If there's any chance in H-E double hockey sticks, we're going to win this division, win multiple playoff games. I think he's just so dominant, and I want nothing to do with trading him. But if this thing continues to stall out and Ezeraku blows up, like let's say it's franchise tag territory, and that's what you're heading for, and here he is playing on the $24 million salary, I would consider trading him at some point, you know, if Nealon, you know, Sam Williams, I don't know how many of these other guys can have a breakout, but could Ezeraku be one of the top 10 pass rushers in football this year? I think that's possible.
Well, that would go a long way into making you feel like, okay, yeah, maybe Micah is a little bit more expendable.
Yeah.
But if you got to the point of like tag or trade, I would rather trade him. I would. Even if Ezeraku isn't some just total like Pro Bowl type player in year one. I think we've seen enough from Ezeraku to know like this dude's got a super bright
future.
He's
gonna be good.
He's gonna be good. So I would rather trade him and get a haul for him as opposed to tag him and pay him $40 million, $35 million of salary cap space in 1 year. That's going to just completely handcuff you in doing anything else with your roster.
Yeah, and let me add to that, like, what if GP and CD are working so beautifully? You're like, we got to lock this guy up, but we're pushing it if we do Pickens. You know, we're going to violate our salary cap pie rules that we've instated on ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it's a decision, like, is it Mike? Is it GP that's sticking around? If Ezeraku's playing well and GP's there, then I think it's a realistic conversation. situation for this team, because if you can get similar pass rush but take away a $40 million obligation that you have, you know, and bring that down to somewhere, I guess GP wanted 25 for the Steelers. Is that what you told us?
Yeah, north of 25 million.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he was looking
for. And it's probably closer to 30 now, but still it's $10 million less. And if that provides an offensive dynamic that sort of fixes the league having you in checkmate with these cover two shells, then I would love that, you know, to consider it. And that was kind of what I was talking about with Stephen Jones yesterday as well. You want to get your star players to the table early. You better have some sort of credibility in your position. And trading the guy, I think, would make players act, you know, in more in accordance with what you're looking for, a team-friendly deal for the next couple, 2-3 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, one of the things, and, I mean, you did a great job of pushing back on Steven, but it's not a comparison when you're talking about doing Jake Ferguson and Osa Digizua and getting those done early to the issue is the top-of-the-market players.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with guys that are looking for the highest paid or one of the top 2 to 3 highest paid at their position, which is what happened with Dak, which is what happened with Zeke, which is what happened with CeeDee Lamb, and it now is happening with one Micah Parsons, that's where these start to kind of drag out and linger. And with Dak, it sounded like it was just a matter of years. Was it 4 or 5? Maybe that's the issue with one Micah. I don't know. But this is something that if they end up not getting it done, then maybe you do look at that.
I think you're absolutely right, Woolchuck. This thing, I think that's why Stephen Jones is frustrated right now. I think it's over 4 or 5 years. I can't tell you the. I think they have an idea about the money. I think both sides are on board with the money. I think this is coming down to 1 year. I think it's the difference between the player wanting 4 million, or excuse me, 4 years, and the front office wanting 5 years. I think that's where this deal is.
Because that fifth year would allow them to make this next year really, really low.
Stretch it, and we can send
that thing into the future and hopefully get more deals done.
I think that's the level. I think that's why he's – the more I went home last night and started talking to a bunch of people, and I think the more that I'm digging into this, it's not about the money. It's about the years. I think that's the problem.
The other spot yesterday with Steven that I wish I'd push back after listening back to that last night was, you know, when he said, when you look to the outside, you have to decide which one of your guys are you moving on from. And obviously the comeback is contenders don't look at it like either or. Contenders look at it like we need all of our guys and we need to go add some other team's guys and then we're ready to win the Super Bowl. And I don't know what I was doing, you know, when he said that. I thought that was a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you go back in hindsight, you're like, damn it, I wish I could have done this and that. But that was one of the things that listening back to it, I was like, well, Steve, I mean, you can bring those names up. That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
But it is the players want these 4 years. That's what happened with Dak, and he got what he wanted. So I wonder if, you know, David Mulligetta and Micah end up getting what they want here if the Cowboys win out, if it's the 4 or the 5. The other players that could get a first rounder are more CD and Tyler Smith, and hopefully we get Tyler Smith done. And then they said 1 first-round pick for Dak Prescott and Tyler Booker. Those are all the players that would net you at least a first rounder or more.
What did it say for CD? What are we getting for CD?
You could get
a 1 and a 2.
It's a 1 and more. Yeah,
1 and more
for CD and Tyler.
I would think like a team that needs CD is probably a playoff team. Those picks are going to happen in the late teens at the lowest. I wouldn't even dream of giving up CD for anything less than 2 1s. Like, how many drafts would it take before you were confident we're going to get a player as good as Micah Parsons or CD Lamb? You could have 10 first round picks and never get.
That's the tough one. You let players that are as talented as that walk out the door. You know, you're not sure what you're going to be able to do.
Let me ask you this. The whole thing with Micah Parsons was an injury and a move, right? We didn't see this guy being this kind of pass rusher, right?
No. We did not see that at Penn State.
See, that's what I'm saying, though. Maybe the guys, like, the way these receivers are, and I'm nothing against CeeDee Lamb and nothing against George Pickens and nothing against any of these Jefferson or Chase or any of these guys. We're starting to see a lot of wide receivers that are playing at a super, super, super high level. That kid in Jacksonville, Brian Thomas.
Yep. Yeah.
We're all kind of like going, Brian, the LSU guy, you know, well, hey, this, that, and the other. Next thing you know, we're all forgetting about him like, well, you know, or we're talking about him like one of the best fantasy draft guys or whatever, however you want to talk about him. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but I think we're closer to being able to say, well, you're not going to find another player like that. I'm starting to feel like that's not true.
A wide receiver, we can.
Maybe on edge, too.
Okay.
Donovan Ezeraku
Yeah.
out here. If you told Donovan Ezeraco right now looks like a better pass rusher than maybe Micah did starting out.
Come on.
See, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So to say that you might not, well, I, you know, people go, well, there's no way you'll never get another guy like that. I don't know about that.
If you believe in your person, in your department there to scout him out,
yeah.
I mean, there are talented players. I mean, look, at we just had Deron Bland on.
Yeah.
Deron Bland.
Yeah. I blame the Pac-12 for not scouting. You
know, I mean, how many pass rushers are this good, though? Is there five Raiders, Bengals, Browns, Steelers, Cowboys?
How about the guy, though, the guy from the Raiders, though?
It's Crosby.
Crosby. Yeah. I mean, we're all kind of like, you know, watching him play small school, right? One of the Michigan, directional Michigan schools.
Yeah, he might have been like a Western Michigan guy.
But that's what I'm saying. We're watching these guys play, and maybe you get a little lucky with some of these. I think they got lucky that they figured out that Micah Parsons can rush the passer.
I agree with that. It kind of fell into their lap.
And I mean that in a respectful way. Sometimes you have to be lucky to build your team. The fact that Dan Quinn said, well, hey, let's play him at edge and see what happens. And they play against the Chargers, and the next thing you know, he's ripping and roaring around the corner, and you're like, oh, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. I even asked the scout, Stuckey.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Stuckey.
Yeah, Justin Stuckey.
Justin Stuckey. I asked him who scouted him at Penn State. I said, Stuckey, did you know? He goes, nah.
Because you didn't see that from him.
He had
tremendous range, super athlete.
Could see him blitz or whatever.
You watch him the Cotton Bowl against Memphis. He's inside rushing, and
it wasn't like Abdul Carter.
But it's not like this guy that was this 16 sack type of a player.
No, not at all. And it's fascinating that you bring that up because here is the Eagles, and this is Jordan Mailata talking about a guy that we liked quite a bit, Jalix Hunt. Now, where did Jalix Hunt play?
He went to school at Sam Houston?
Houston Christian.
Gosh, I knew it was one of those
And
places.
It was Eastern Michigan, by the way, on Max Ross. We just want to go ahead and but he began his college career as a safety at Cornell. Then he goes to Houston Christian. He was a third-round pick. He was one of the guys that I think on the draft show, like, he was a darling for us.
He was.
We thought, oh, my gosh.
Where did we see him? It was one of those all-star games. I think that he played an all-star game. We kind of, like, picked him up.
East-West.
He might have been a Shrine Bowl guy.
He might have been a Shrine Bowl guy.
Yeah. But here was Jordan Mailata talking about Jalix Hunt.
Jalix this year versus...
Jalix?
Yeah.
Oh, man, he's going to be special. He's going to be special, man. Just his burst, his... He has tendencies like Micah, just to be able to cut on a dime like that. Man, I'm so proud of that guy, the way he works. How do I go from Josh Sweat to Jalix, man? It's crazy. I was just like, man, Howie, give me a break for 1 year. Jesus. Jalix is going to be a star, man. And I'm glad that I get to go up against him because I know that if he's giving me hell, he's going to give everyone else hell.
But that's drafting, right? We've got a guy that we have now brought in. He's going into year two. Josh Sweat, awesome season. Go sign in free agency. We're going to need a comp pick back for that. Why do we feel good about it? We got this kid waiting in the wings. And I hope that Jalix Hunt is nowhere near what Micah Parsons is because that's going to be a real pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Just from us having watched him in college, yeah, he does have quite the burst. He does have a lot of bend. He is a super fast, athletic, twitchy guy.
I mean, he made an appearance in the Super Bowl. He got at least one sack on Mahomes in that Super Bowl.
It is glazing season, though.
It is glazing season.
Yeah.
This is glazing season.
I'm Jay Glazer. Jay Glazer. That's who I am.
But maybe we shouldn't live in fear about moving on in the unknown.
Last two guests we had, I've glazed them up.
We'll find some
guys. These guys are so happy to talk to us. They really are.
I thought you were going to do more glazing of Steven yesterday.
Well, after the way Dawson just freaking put him in a headlock and slammed him to the ground, I felt like, hey, boss, I'm trying to help you here.
Brian's good for a good glaze during every interview.
Oh, I am a glazed donut guy.
Dude, did you give John Schneider? Congratulations, you got a big extension.
Yeah, it's my $3.5 million
intern. Seattle. He should send you at least like a fruit basket or something.
We got to run.
Johnny's
G-Mac
a
Nation.
Fun guy to go have beers with, by the
105.3 The Fan. When we come back, I want to ask Broadus about the guy who probably made the catch of the day today at camp. Is there something with this guy? And player to watch on the defensive line, I did a deep dive on it, and I wish I hadn't. But that's coming up next here, G-Mac Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thank you, Lucius. G-Mac Nation here, 105.3 The Fan. Our training camp coverage continues. It got testy down there on the practice fields again today, and if you missed it on social or you just check it checking in with us. Shoddy actually broke him down, told him to stop fighting, and then there was more, and he made him run. He made him run suicides, basically, there at the end of practice, saying if they want to fight, go ahead and get after it. Let's see how you can fight in the wind sprint line. And I love it, you know, because discipline is something that this team has needed. I think there is something to the fact of, you know, what Ryan Clark was saying yesterday, that here with the Cowboys, the fans, the media, maybe they treat you like you already made it. And there's not that sort of element of fear that I think gets the absolute best habits out of players.
Yeah, for sure. And especially with Schottenheimer being, he comes across like a player's coach,
yeah,
or whatever. He's fun, the camaraderie, they're playing the ping pong and stuff. And we were talking about, like, you also have to have that element of putting the hammer down a little bit.
Yeah,
accountability. And Bland was, you know, speaking on that with us a little bit earlier. That's a huge component of this. So I love it. I love it, and I love that he's talking about, hey, all the injuries that have happened, so be it. It's football. We got to practice hard. We got to be physical, that whole deal. So I loved seeing that today.
I bet Sharif loved, you know, the practice today with how many fights there were. You know, I bet, you know, he'd love to see that doubled. So we'll look forward to Sharif tomorrow, 6 to 10, with RJ and Bobby. They were just down the way chatting with CeeDee Lamb. So there's a good tease for their show tomorrow. I wanted to ask you about the play of the day, Trayshon Holden there, back of the end zone. He goes up and stabs it with his right. Then on the way down, he secures it with both hands on the numbers. Undrafted out of Oregon, the wide receiver coach they hired has history with him. Is this something, you know, we should be looking at, or just a depth piece? What else has happened for Trayshon Holden besides today's play of the day?
Yeah,
he made a couple plays today.
He did. This is where when you get Pickens in the building, now everybody gets pushed down a rung. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, Tolbert's battling Mingo for the third spot.
Tolbert might be battling old Holden.
Hold on. I think we have a fire alarm over there at the Staybridge Suite, which isn't a surprise considering the smell.
It happened last year.
Yeah, I think we got to open a window there, boys.
It's just a skunk happy environment out here. That's what that is.
I will say this, though. There was a time when I used to like watch tape when I was working with .com. It'd be late night. I'd be watching tape and
fire up a spliff.
It was kind of like you were at the concert, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be sitting there watching tape, and I'm like, well, somebody's enjoying life.
You need some post practice relaxation.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
No.
Nothing wrong with that. But
they don't waste any time, man.
I will say this, though, about with Holden and stuff. He does have a sponsor now, and maybe that doesn't bode well for guys like Flournoy and you know, the others that are trying to battle for spot. Brooks is kind of in that mix. That Brooks has shown capable of making. See, the thing about Brooks is he was like a special teams player, and so how many of these guys are going to be special teams players? Can Holden be better than Brooks as a special teams player? If you think about how everything's bumped down too, and if they keep Tolbert and it's Mingo. Then they got Turpin. Now
you Pickens. Keep you got six? Five. Yeah,
yeah. You keep six. I mean, I think
four guys battling for one spot. If they do,
pretty didn't much. Even mention him. I mean, to me,
yeah.
And they probably feel so differently. They're probably like, "You're an idiot. This guy's not even on the bubble." But I would have just Tolbert on the cut.
He has not had a great camp, has he?
I'd rather give a guy a shot like Holt. If he goes out and plays well in the preseason, I mean, this is we still got a lot of this left to go.
Sure.
But to me, like, I know what Jalen Tolbert is. I'd rather give, and I don't think Tolbert's going to give you much in the way of special teams personally. Could be very wrong on that. But Mingo, I think, has eclipsed him. Obviously, you got Turpin. Brooks, I think, has actually done okay when he's been given reps in the regular season. And to Brian's point, special teams guy. Yeah. Holden's got the sponsor. He's got the wide receivers coach and Junior Adams. And maybe that's a guy you look to move on from. Maybe that's a trade asset for you. Maybe some other team looks at Jalen Tolbert and says, hey, we'll take him and you can swap him for a DB or something you were talking about yesterday, Brian. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to me, if you're looking at a veteran guy that could be on the bubble, I would have Tolbert there.
Okay, one player to watch, Brian's been telling us about in the last couple of practices, Perrion Winfrey, 6'4", 294.
Whose list is this, Dawson? Is this your own list, or is this you reading off someone's list?
No, I was looking at a Perrion Winfrey last night because you guys have been talking about
guys.
It.
Oh, I thought maybe somebody was putting this out. Okay.
No, I was just curious about Trayshon Holden after the big play today.
Oh, no,
and
good
then
for you. I thought maybe you were looking at someone's list that, like, oh, keep an eye on this guy practice. Like, well, that person's watching practice if that's the case.
Yeah. I'm probably actually working off your Twitter account, if I'm being honest. Oh,
okay. I'm going off the broadest list.
Fourth round 2022, waived by the Browns after threatening and pulling a gun on a woman in Cleveland that was classified as a robbery incident. He took the women's phones and then left them on a platform in an alley. And then police came and found that, and you know they looked through the film and basically saw him, in some sort of a dispute that got ugly and whatever. You know, things happen late, and if it was just that, I'd be like, okay, police say the victim had a red abrasion on her neck, so you know who knows exactly what all happened there. But then in Houston, he was dating a woman, and apparently she called the authorities after he grabbed her hand super, super hard. And in June, he was robbed outside of a club at 3 a.m. Like, he was hanging out with a guy who got robbed for his wheels in the parking lot.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
That's a lot more than I even thought. There's a lot. I mean, you'd have to have the quickness and the burst and all that that he's showing in camp.
You got to be a stud to
be able to do, like, well, wait a minute now. Did you watch practice film the other day? Well, man, this guy's, like, taking women's phones. He's hiding out. The cops are talking to him. But wait a minute. Did you watch him? He beat Booker. Did you see, like, two times he beat, you know. Yeah.
So is he doing all this? Do you think he's, like, looking like a starting defensive tackle? Put this in context.
I just feel like, to me, that there's a guy when we watched him. Did you see him in Oklahoma?
Yeah.
He was an undersized.
I think he blocked a kick against Texas, right?
They played that slant front.
He played like a zero nose. He was like a head up, undersized nose. And when you watch him out here and you see, like, him going up against Tyler Smith, it's a battle who can, like, outpower the other one. This guy's got some, like, and I always say this, got some snap. You know, when guys come off the ball on him and he extends, they stop. I mean, they just kind of stop, and then they, you know, and then there's a battle there. And when he's rushing the passer, he's really, I mean, he's got this kind of this ability to the quickness to be able to get around, you know, like whether it was Booker one time. I mean, Booker tried to get his hands, Booker misses. He's around Booker. Now he's in the backfield on Dak. So I didn't know the rap sheet, but I knew, like, watching him play at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
The guy had some power,
playmaker,
had some quickness, and then out here in the practice field, he's not going to get stiffs. He's going against our guys who can, we think, can actually play, and he's having some success. That's how he catches my eye.
Well, I was down the rabbit hole, you know, and so it made me wonder. And then you mentioned, like, he is at a stalemate with Tyler Smith, one of the strongest guards in the league. So he is a guy who was very productive in college. 40% of his tackles went for losses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, so he's blowing up plays and getting the backfield. It just seems like a great fit for Eberflus. I wonder, at 295.
I'm just going to tell you this. He's looked better than Osa.
Wow.
He's looked better than Osa.
There's really a line.
I haven't noticed much of Osa.
Osa had a tackle for loss today, but that was really the first time that, I mean, and Osa is a battling dude. But Winfrey and guys like that have, I mean, I know Winfrey's shown up. There's been times when, you know, when even with Peyton Turner moving inside, getting a rush on Booker, you know, and I'm like, oh, Peyton Turner can't rush the passer. Maybe that's not good for Booker. I'm not saying that Booker's a butt. But Winfrey, when you watch him come off the ball, he's making things happen where Osa's kind of making things happen late.
Huh.
Winfrey's making it happen a little earlier in the rush.
Right on.
Today,
well, that's.
I don't think I saw Winfrey running with the ones a ton, at least today.
Yeah.
I think they were doing.
Mozzie,
Toyita was in there.
Yeah. Mozzie was the three. Mozzie was a three. Jay Toya was a three. And those guys were three. Those guys were all. Guys that were kind of getting some rotational work.
Just the base, Thomas and Osa. Winfrey. I mean, Winfrey, I think, was also a guy at OU. The arms. He's got super long arms, so he's a guy that will bat down a lot of balls at the line of scrimmage. But he is a very upright player.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that I remember noting about him. He's not a guy that's going to get your pad level down a ton. But, they might have found another guy here that can get – and they want to rotate. I mean, Coach Wycon's talked about that. They're going to rotate.
If you're talking about, Mozzie playing the three, I would play Osa, and I would play Winfrey right now, seven practices in, you know, that's your better backup to Osa right now, if you ask me.
Man, thank you for that breakdown. Brian brought us on fire. He'll have more practice notes coming up at 5:20 when we hit the expressway. G-Bag today, 5:30, then LA Live, 5:40. We have Sands on next with the trade deadline 24 hours out here on your home. Rangers, 105.3 The Fan.